And so that's our practice here. Many of you are already practicing. You try it out here. It requires alertness. It requires you to be alert to see what your relationship is to the present moment, at this moment. So you need a certain degree of alertness is needed. And so it also implies that your sense perceptions will become sharpened, because very often you will find yourself looking and listening with greater intensity, greater clarity, as you walk from here to there, as you sit, lie, stand. And the amazing thing is, when you no longer deny this, the isness of now, the stream of mental noise that we call thinking, that is totally conditioned by the past, slows down. And you may encounter spaces of pure, alert, aware presence. You may find yourself looking at a tree or a flower or the sky in a state of simple, alert clarity. And you are so aligned with this beautiful moment that there is no need to add something to it by labeling it mentally in any way or interpreting it in any way. Nothing is needed. Nothing needs to be added to the incredible aliveness, the incredible beauty that's already here. And before, you couldn't see it because you could only see it through very obscurely through some screen of that thinking screen. And then you might walk through nature and say, oh, there's a pretty flower. And the mind goes on. Oh, look at that tree. That must be an oak tree. I wonder how old it is. Yes. And then on to the next. And this is, so the cessation of the involuntary stream of thinking that most people are totally trapped in comes with the yes to what is. You don't need to say, okay, I have to stop my mind. That usually doesn't work. Occasionally, people who are in extreme agony of suffering, occasionally that can stop your mind. But unfortunately, that's not your case. So we have to make do with what we have here. And that is, you've suffered enough. You wouldn't be here if you hadn't. You've suffered enough because you see what an unsatisfying place the world is when you are not connected with that which is beyond and deeper. But when you are connected, and the portal is now, when you are connected, the world isn't really that unsatisfying anymore because your expectations are considerably lower. Now, that sounds negative, but let me explain. You no longer expect that some person or some situation or some achievement or some place or some possession should make you fulfilled and happy. You're no longer looking to the world to make you happy, to give you, to add to you, to finally make the sense of self complete. Now I'm full. I've got everything. Just wait. Either you lose again, or you're so full that you become more and more unhappy again. It's too much. I'm traveling all the time, first class. I'm eating thrice a day in the best restaurants. I've got all the men and women I want. They all run after me because I'm so wealthy. I can't take anymore. It's all so unreal. It's all so meaningless. So when you don't, you no longer expect the world to make you happy. With the world means what I've just listed: possession, place, person, to fulfill you. Please make me happy. And when you don't have that expectation anymore, when the world, which really comes down to the form that this moment takes, is allowed to be as it is right now, internally, it is allowed to be as it is. There you are. This is the form that this moment takes. It is as it is, and it is allowed to be as it is. Then life becomes very satisfying. Because you don't expect your satisfaction from that form. Your satisfaction comes from the allowing of this form, which takes you to a deeper place, to a place of great spaciousness within. Because there's suddenly, when you allow this moment, there is space around this moment, inner space, one could say. And that is a space of peace and stillness around even the most seemingly unpleasant event. Oh. Oh. And that is deeply satisfying. And it doesn't depend on what happens or does not happen. Another word for this is surrender to life. It doesn't mean you become weak. The opposite is, you are very weak when you are not surrendered to life. When you are surrendered to life, life flows through you, the very intelligence that underlies the entire universe moves through you and can express itself fully through you. You become strong in surrender, not as a little egoic entity. Deeper, not by cutting yourself off, not better than, no, not through comparison, from a deep place within. Oh. So there is another way to live. A shift is possible, not only possible, it has become absolutely necessary for humanity to step out of the collective dysfunction of the human mind. And that's why we are here, and why this teaching, so-called teaching, which isn't a teaching really that comes to you from the outside, it arises from within. If it were not arising already from within you, you wouldn't be here. It's as if you were listening to the truth being spoken from within you. That's really how it is. And you recognize the truth. It's so obvious. When you look at the dysfunction, it's so obvious. Denying the now, making it into an obstacle, an enemy, how absurd. And going beyond, it's so obvious that you can live differently without needing again, not falling into the error that you need to become something that you are not now. I need to become enlightened at some future point. I will become, I need to work towards that. One day I'm going to make it. You've fallen into the same mental trap again, which is projecting a future self that is seen to be perfect. Again, you're lost in future, mental projection. You don't, for this shift to happen, you don't need future. This is the amazing thing. The mind will always come back in and say, okay, you need to work on this, get good at it, better at it, or it's not enough yet. All you need is allow this moment to be, whatever form it takes. And this includes inner forms, emotions that come. What can you do? It's there. Anger, fear, it may come. Less when you live in alignment with now, you can see how quickly those painful emotions subside, but for a while they're still there and they arise. That's what is. I can feel this vibration here. Could be called fear, perhaps. All right, that's how it is. Not resisting. That's, I'm allowing. It is not personal. The more you allow, the more you realize how little personal there is in what you thought was uniquely personal. Human emotion, that's all. A human emotion. Oh. And it ceases to be problematic. Oh. Allow. So the miraculous thing is you don't need to become anything. Just allow what is there. So I say that some people want to become a spiritual master. That's an idea in the head. Any spiritual, so-called spiritual master who has the idea in the head that I'm a spiritual master is already lost. Because there's a mental image of who you are. Now, I'm a so-called spiritual teacher at this moment. If I walked out of here and carried in my head the image of me, the spiritual teacher, that would become a dreadful burden. I would be based again in thought. I would have to live up to some image, expectation. Fear would quickly arise. What are they going to think of me tomorrow? But not to carry an identity, not a future identity of me as a spiritual teacher, a spiritual master. What is spiritual mastery? Spiritual mastery is to live in alignment with this moment. What do I need to become a spiritual master? Say yes to what is. That's what how a spiritual master lives. He doesn't resist, he or she doesn't resist what is. And is therefore empowered. The master doesn't demand that the form of this moment should be perfect always. It's not in the nature of forms to be perfect always. There is an imperfection in almost any situation that you go into. And that's fine and good. That is no longer a source of suffering when you recognize it's in the nature of form to go wrong here and there. It does nothing wrong ultimately, but to shift, to change. So the most wonderful place will have a downside to it. Of course it will. The tropical paradise. Friends of mine went to Bali. They hired a cabin in the most beautiful surroundings. Paradise, the air like velvet, the scent of flowers. Wow! They started cooking a meal and suddenly they heard strange scratching noises on the roof and on the windows, and there were rats looking in. And then they learned to live with rats. They had realized what they had to do to keep them out. And you don't expect the forms to be continuously perfect. They are not. So here too, you are in this retreat center, there will be certain imperfections level of form. In your room, in your bathroom, in the dining hall, who knows where? The most unexpected places. Oh no. This is supposed to be my great time off. I've waited for this and now I'm here and this isn't right. Ah, the world of form. Oh, I've forgotten it's the world of form. And then you can allow it, unless you choose to say something about it. Can you please change this? Maybe they can, maybe they can't. But it is as it is. So you live with the so-called imperfections of the world of form, and when you say yes, that's actually not so bad at all. You actually begin to become comfortable with that. You recognize them again and again. Oh, here it comes again. Ah, and when something leaves you, because things tend to do, if you get something and something leaves you again, say, ah, Buddhists sometimes use the word, I think it's anicca, impermanence. Oh, impermanence. Oh, okay, that's how it goes. So, that's the practice. It's so simple here. It just requires a little bit of alertness. What's your relationship to now? Are you aligned with it? Do you bring a yes to it? If not, you can notice that. And by noticing that you are not aligned with now, you can easily step. The very noticing is a stepping out of the non-alignment. Ah, okay. And then you're back in now. Oh, okay. Step back. We'll also see the inner body, of course, as many of you know, can be used as an anchor for staying present, to feel the aliveness in your inner energy field. That becomes an anchor for staying rooted in now. Especially at night when involuntary thought processes start playing up. And you just can't stop it. It's like a river, it's like a stream. It goes, and it can be dreadful, dreadful torture. You're not, of course, it's totally useless. You're not arriving at any conclusion. No possible realization can come out of that. All realizations come out of a moment of space, spacious stillness. Ah, that's what I have to do. Okay. But not out of that stream. And so you can choose to put your attention. The mind doesn't like it. The mind, which is the combined thought forms that are happening to go through your head, in your head, they want to keep your attention in there. And you say, okay, I'm going to feel my hands now. And then you feel the aliveness that is still there, miraculously. And in your feet, there's an aliveness. And in your legs, ah. And then you can feel the pull of your thinking. You must think about this. No, I'm in my hands. Feel, ah. Oh, legs. And suddenly, it's good. All your attention is moved from the head into the body. And suddenly you realize you're not in hell, you're in a warm bed.
Yeah.
And then you realize how benign and benevolent, mostly, not always, the present moment actually is, the reality of now compared to the hell that the human mind can create and often does create. How benevolent this moment is. And this is just one example of when you lie in bed and your head creates hell. Thank you. I wish you a pleasant night.
This concludes lesson one. Lesson two, get into your body. Practices for inner body awareness.
If you've been to a talk or retreat before, you know that I often point out at this stage that you should check within to see if you are waiting for something to happen. Waiting for the talk to start. What does that mean, waiting? It means there's a little bit of inner strain, a slight, very tiny inner stress that pulls you away from here and now. Expressed facially, could be like and when you notice that, then you know something about your relationship with the present moment. You lost it. The end of a relationship. Now, did he or she leave you, or did you leave him or her? He or she doesn't leave you. You left. The waiting is so subtle and so all-pervasive as one's normal state of consciousness that most people don't even know that they're in an almost continuous state of waiting. That's how normal it is. Once you detect it in yourself as a slight tension, strain, stress. Sometimes there's a little bit of irritation mixed in. A thought mixed in. Come on, let's get on with it. We only have a couple of hours this morning. Come on. But if you notice it in yourself as a mental energy field, even some emotion may go with it. Irritation is an emotion. Thoughts go with it occasionally. The moment you notice it, something has arisen that is not part of that deeply conditioned mind pattern. The seeing of it is not part of it. The seeing of it, and that's the seeing of any pattern in yourself, is not part of the pattern. And the seeing, the recognizing of it, requires you to be present, aware at this moment, awake. So when you see a pattern in yourself, mental, emotional, conditioned, of course. Now the waiting is a collective pattern. Almost everybody has that. There may be other patterns in you that you detect that are to do with your personal life. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be the simplest thing. When you see a man with a beard and dark hair, you feel anxious, and then you realize that maybe he looks like your father and you didn't have a good relationship with him. So any pattern, collective or personal, when you detect it, you can. There's something more at that moment than that which you see. There is the seeing of it. Before, the pattern absorbed your consciousness completely. You wear it. You become it. You are the waiting, anxious, somewhat irritated person. There's no space around the irritation, around the stress of that moment. There's no space around it. You are in it. And then suddenly you see it. And one could say it is a stepping back, perhaps the deeper meaning of retreat. Because you're retreating not only from the world that you usually move in, you have to retreat also from the world in your head. You step back. And something arises that is not conditioned, and that is pure, simple, pure, miraculous consciousness, awareness, presence, whatever you want to call it. And that is the part in you that is not conditioned. Everything else is conditioned. The seeing, that is an energy field. I'm using seeing metaphorically. It's not necessarily with your eyes. The noticing, the seeing, you may feel it without, but there is the presence in which it is felt, which means suddenly there's space around that. And so it could be anything that you notice in yourself. It could be compulsive behavior, this or that, compulsive reaction. Almost everything is compulsive. Well, everything is compulsive when you are not there as the witnessing presence. Your entire movement of thought is compulsive. You can't stop, or you think you can't stop. And the mind loves to tell you that you cannot stop and make a problem out of that, which leads to further thinking. why can't I stop my mind? I mean, what's wrong with me? I've been doing meditation for years. I've been coming to, and I still can't do it. There's no point in going on, is there? And then you believe in every thought. There's no point in going on. I might as well chuck it all in. And then suddenly you step back and you watch those thoughts. So, this is the arising of something new in you. New in the sense that you hadn't noticed that dimension in yourself before. It was there all along, waiting underneath all the conditioned mind movements, but you didn't know it was there. And suddenly it arises. It kind of, at this time in the evolution of the planet and of humanity, that is pushing through from underneath all the conditioned collective stuff that people carry and identify with as themselves. Something else is pushing forward from a deeper dimension within you. It's almost like the eggshell needing to break. Something wants to come out of there. And so there comes a time when the shell, and which is really the shell of that egoic sense of self that consists of identification with thought, needs to break. There is an evolutionary impulse in the universe towards consciousness. And that has been playing itself out on the planet for millions of years. Consciousness expressing itself in ever-changing forms. And through humans, consciousness now wants to come to a flowering that hasn't happened before, never on a large scale, only to a few isolated individuals. And what humans did to them, well, either they ignored them completely, or they killed them, or they made them into gods to be worshipped. And those were only the few individuals in whom this came through almost prematurely, but they were necessary precursors of what was to come, a deeper change. Now, I'm not telling you, of course, to wait for some change to happen on the planet. You know, there are many, many, many times in the history groups of people have waited for the end or some drastic change. We are not waiting. I'm just pointing out that this gathering here is already part of this transformation, this flowering of consciousness. And anybody who in a so-called future moment, which doesn't exist, listens to this, it'll be in the now. Nobody could ever listen to this anywhere else except in the now, is also part of that transformation of consciousness, because as you listen, something new arises. There is more here than the words. There is that which the words point to, which is here as an alive presence in you. An inner arising. There's more here than the words. If there were only the words, it wouldn't be that much. So consciousness then wants to flower through the human form. Whether it fully will do that on a large scale, we don't know yet. Although it is happening here, there's also the dysfunction of the old form, which is no longer working. Similar to a caterpillar that comes to the end of its lifespan as a caterpillar. And the closer it comes to the end of its lifespan as a caterpillar, the more difficult it gets to continue to... Suddenly the crawling doesn't work anymore. Things don't work anymore. The caterpillar existence becomes dysfunctional. It was fine before, because something new is destined to emerge out of this thing that is bound by gravity, can't even lift itself up one inch. And now the evolutionary transformation, when it happens, is not a progressive thing of getting better and better at doing something in a certain way, but a complete leap to another dimension. So in the case of the caterpillar, it doesn't mean that he gets better at crawling faster and faster. No, that is left behind completely, and something emerges that is it's a different being. Suddenly something comes out of it and it has the most beautiful wings and it flies off, has almost no weight at all, has completely transcended the gravity of the planet. And in the case of humans, what does that mean? Humans have been immersed in thinking for thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of years. The arising of thought was a necessary stage in the evolution. It's wonderful side too, to be able to think and speak, which is connected with thinking, words, form words and concepts. And yet gradually humans lost through that, became totally entangled in it, and they lost their connectedness with something deeper than thought. They perhaps once had it, a deep connection with life. Not the life of form, the formless one life that is the essence of who you are. The one formless life. But that connection humans had in the way that everything natural still has that. But they didn't even know it. It was so natural, they couldn't imagine anything else. They had that deep connectedness in which there's no fear of death. Because there's a deep knowing that there is no death, only the form dissolving. The leaf, all the millions of billions of leaves that we see around us now are all dying. And there's such beauty in their death even. And they are not afraid of death. They just die beautifully. So in humans, thought gradually captured their consciousness, so that their whole sense of self became entangled in thought. And then gradually thought itself became more dysfunctional. It created a dysfunctional world. So when you, from the beginning of recorded history, if you read history and are alert, as if you had just come here from another planet and you are reading human history for the first time, you can see that a large part of the human suffering, that is history, is inflicted on humans by other humans. All the wars and murder and cruelties, continuous warfare, except brief interludes, because they got exhausted for a while. And then the most dysfunctional century, the 20th. 100 million dead, killed by other humans. And this is a continuation, the 21st century. So on that level, the old continues. The caterpillar is still trying to have its way. And it's getting more and more difficult. Similarly, we could compare it to the flowering of plants, this incredible beauty that has arisen on the planet through flowers, consciousness expressing itself through this ethereal form of flowers that humans have always recognized as very special. And it's all flowers have had a significance. Well, perhaps the first thing in humanity that was not utilitarian, that you couldn't really eat or do anything with it. And yet they valued that beyond anything that they could do with it. Because deep down, in a very, very deep, distantly, they recognized perhaps beauty there for the first time. When the first human discovered beauty. Ah. But flowers came much later than plants. There were 100 million or 200 million years of plants before the first flower ever opened. I'm told that was about 230 million years ago the first flower opened on the planet. But many millions of years before that, plants already covered the planet. Now, certain plants flowered, others chose not to flower. And perhaps it will be the same with humanity. Perhaps only part of humanity will go through this inner shift and the other part will say, no, we're okay as we are. But it only requires part of humanity to go through this flowering for the entire energy field of the planet to be transformed. So what humans then are not doing is to continue perfecting the old way. The caterpillar trying to crawl faster and faster, if we use this metaphor for humans, then that would mean humans develop the thinking mind more and more. This is what, of course, they've been trying to do. Let's analyze this, more and more analysis, more and more getting facts and thinking. Okay, how can we solve the problems that we've got? Seem to have a proliferation of problems on the planet. They seem to get more and more. I don't know. And then, okay, let's get together and think and see how we can solve this and analyze this problem, cut it into bits and pieces. Well, this is what they do at universities. They cut the subject matters into tinier and tinier pieces. 100 or 200 years ago, it was more satisfying still to be engaged in intellectual endeavors because you had a wide field. Everybody at university had a huge amount of knowledge. Even the scientists had great knowledge of. They knew Latin and Greek and had knowledge of classical culture and everything. And nowadays, they have knowledge of a tiny segment of their speciality. They can't afford to study anything else. So it's not all that interesting anymore. You could study the you can write a PhD on the leaves of a tree, the leaf of the oak tree. You can do a whole, it's this wonderful phenomenon, of course, the leaf, but to see it in isolation. So everything, the mind cuts it up. And it doesn't solve anything. Any solution that it comes up with creates more problems. Okay, now we'll invent a medicine to combat the side effects of this medicine. And then another one to combat the side effects. So the humanity we've really come to the end of the road as far as one particular line of growth or development is concerned. And now the shift needs to happen and is happening to something entirely different, which means thinking will become no longer primary, but secondary. You can still think beautifully, but you're no longer trapped in thought. Something arises that is deeper than thought, and that is the butterfly. It's like something suddenly emerging that's so different from what was there before. And some of you have already experienced that in yourself, that shift from there was once this anxious, depressed, or whatever, angry, stressful little me. Something else has come, and there's been an opening and a spaciousness that wasn't there before, or was there but had been obscured continuously. That is the new. And it's from there that you see the old in you, which of course still has its momentum. It has its momentum both on the external level. When you see the news and read the newspapers, then you can see how strong the momentum of the dysfunctional consciousness in humanity still is. And you can see it in yourself occasionally, that the old reactivity, the old reactions, or the waiting for the next thing, the denial of what is, in various ways of running away from the present moment, all these old movements also still periodically come as wave movements. And, oh. And sometimes even the seeing is lost. Even in those in whom the new is already arising, sometimes they get lost totally in the old, deeply conditioned, collective, personal mind movement. And wake up a few hours later, a few days later, you might even be lost a few weeks. I've heard of people who got lost for a whole year. And then they couldn't stand the suffering anymore. And finally, through the suffering, they got woken up again. Oh, I tell you. It's like being in a nightmare when it gets so bad that you can't stand it anymore. Suddenly you go, and you realize that you're in a bed, a warm bed. And this is a very significant term, waking up. And of course it has been used for thousands of years in spiritual teachings, awaken, because everybody knows what awakens means on one level, because everybody wakes up every morning out of sleep, and you know what that is. So there's dream, sleep, and dream, and then they go. So it's used as a kind of metaphor to describe something that is similar to waking up from sleep. But of course it's not that, because in spiritual terms, ordinary human consciousness is a kind of sleep also. To be identified completely with one's conditioned thinking and emotion, that movement, to be totally identified with that is a kind of dream, conditioned. And so most humans are still in it, but many, many more than ever before are now waking up out of that. But to see in yourself, to verify it in yourself, that it is a kind of dream to be in that. Because, and it creates a certain reality that corresponds to your conditioning. You interpret through the veil of this dream, through the old interpretations and reactions, you interpret the events and people and situations around you. So everything, it gets incorporated into the dream world. So you see nothing then as it is, because you impose your dream on it. Human beings that come into your life, situations that you are in, you don't see it as it is. You only see your story about it. And then a moment comes when you wake up and you see the possibility of relating, of being and relating without the otherwise compulsive mental interpretations that you have. Sometimes when we speak of allowing this moment to be as it is, which is the essential spiritual practice, people think what we are talking about is like allowing their interpretation of this moment. They cannot distinguish between this moment and there the way in which they interpret this moment, how they personalize it. So you could be sitting on a park bench, and you may have heard this teaching that says, allow this moment to be as it is. And then you think, okay, I'm a former CEO of that company who lost his position due to evil people around him, and then soon later was left by his wife. His children don't like him. This man is saying, okay, this moment I need to accept is that my life is in ruins. It's come to nothing. Here I sit penniless on this bench. 30 years of hard work, nothing to show for it. It's all gone. What I need to accept now is that my life is a complete mess and totally in ruins. That's a story. So the man is confusing a story with this moment. And he is imposing a story on this moment. That's one story. There are many other possible stories. The reality is always much more simple than the story. The story is this bench, this energy field sitting here, sensing the aliveness in the inner body, the trees, the birds, the clouds, the air, the sound of the leaves in the wind, the aliveness of it all, vibrant, without needing to tell yourself anything. You sense that, you see it. This moment is the simplicity of sitting here on the park bench and watching the aliveness all around. What do you need to interpret? You accept this moment as it is, and then you put your hand in your pocket and you pull out $2. That's what I have here, $2. All right. You accept that. What else can you do? That's what is. So the story of ruined and all come to nothing and I can't, well, now I'm going to make it anymore. All that mind movement is not part of the simplicity of now. So don't confuse when we speak of accept what is. Don't confuse a story with the simplicity of what is. What is just this. Here, sense perceptions, feeling the inner body, and most importantly, something that's usually ignored, to be aware of, it's very hard to use words here, to be aware, and as I speak, there's the possibility that this is now seen, experienced by you here. As you sit here, what is the reality of this moment? You let go of the stories in your head about who you are or what your life is. That's your life situation, not your life. That's past. So what's, and it's all a story. It's the story of me in the head that you tell yourself. I'm not talking, if it's memories are fine, but to identify with memories, then you personalize. It becomes a me. Your memories become a self. What's the reality of this moment here, sitting here? There are sense perceptions, auditory, the humming sound and the voice, visual sense perceptions of the room, a person sitting up here, other people in the room, the ceiling, the lights, sunlight coming in, flowers up here. And you can feel perhaps your inner body also, the aliveness that is there in your inner energy field. And underlying all that, even deeper than anything that you experience or notice at this moment, is the alert attention, the field of alert attention in which this seeing, this hearing, this sensing is happening. One could also call it a field of stillness. There's a field. An alert stillness in which your sense perceptions happen. That alert stillness is always there. Otherwise, there would be nothing. For anything to be, there needs to be consciousness in which the experience or the thought or the perception happens. So that alert underlying field is consciousness itself. And it is a revolutionary thing for a human to become aware of that, but it is also very, very subtle. It is not something that you can grasp. The mind will try to make it into some new object, and the danger, of course, is there when we talk about it. We make it into an object of consciousness because we put it into words. We make a thought out of it, out of something that is far beyond thought. So the mind thinks there is something here to grasp and hang on to or to achieve or to hold. But there isn't. It is all pervasive. The only real power in the universe, and at the same time, it is so subtle that most humans miss it entirely. They don't know that dimension. They only know that which arises in consciousness. They know it, but they identify with it. They react to it. What arises in your field of consciousness are sense perceptions, experiences, thoughts, and emotions. Sense perceptions, experiences, things happen, situations, which is also really sense perceptions, thoughts, emotions. And so they are identified with the objects that arise in consciousness, completely identified. never knowing that deeper level that is the very condition for the arising of anything, comes out of that. And one could describe that as stillness. The word limits it somewhat, but it's a pointer. So one could say there is in you the dimension of stillness. Has never not been there. Is not something that you need to acquire or achieve, that you could achieve in the future, in time. If you're looking to the future to achieve that dimension, enlightenment, whatever you want to call it, if you look to the future to achieve that dimension, that very looking to the future prevents you from seeing that it's already the very essence of your being now. So that's, so many humans are looking to the future to look for fulfillment or enlightenment or liberation in whatever way, through $1 million or through spiritual enlightenment. They look to the future for that, and the moment you move away and look to the future for it as if it were something that you could get from someone or through some experience, you've gone away from it. Mentally, you've gone into the old conditioned mind movement, which is looking to the next thing. This is why I spoke yesterday of the vertical dimension that we are going into here. So the dimension of stillness, let's for a moment use that pointer, and let's never get attached too much to one single pointer, because then you make it into some kind of belief. And the concept satisfies you for a moment. And then you could even say, I believe in stillness. You don't believe in stillness? You're wrong. And then somebody else says, no, it's presence, it's not stillness. There is in you that already, the stillness underneath all the mental noise and the emotional fluctuations, there is that realm of the unconditioned, pure awareness, pure consciousness. And that is, on the one hand, you could call it, the non-personal dimension of you. It is where you transcend the personal sense of self. And then you might say, I don't want to lose myself. But what you hadn't realized is you think that yourself is the story of yourself. But that is no more than thoughts. If you look very deeply and closely into what you mean when you say, I don't want to lose myself, I can feel there's something precious here that I do not want to lose. And you think that sense of something precious that I am, I cannot imagine that I'm going to die. The world, me dead. And the world without me can't be. So there is something, one feels there is something precious, and people, the fear of death comes because people believe this is going to be lost. That sense of precious, if you look closely at what that really is, you see that it is something that has become mixed up with the story that you tell yourself about who you are. The name, the psychological form of me, all the things associated with that, the story of me, the beliefs. And something has become mixed up with that, and that is the sense of I, a deeper sense of beingness that got mixed up with a story. And when you touch the realm of stillness in yourself, that is the deepest fulfillment that could be, and you realize who you truly are is that. That is the essence of your sense of I am. It has nothing to do with the story. It just got confused with the story. Sometimes people discover that whose story is destroyed by life. Life does something to you that you cannot, the story becomes totally unbearable. Everything collapses around you. So you cannot uphold the story anymore of me as somebody who has done this or has done that or has achieved that. It's all left you. Maybe the body has become ill, is collapsing. Things around you are collapsing. There's nothing left that you can claim anything about, make any claim about possession, this or that. It's all gone. I don't know who I am anymore. Some people experience that realization in prison when they are stripped of everything. Everything has left them. The story has collapsed. I don't understand anything. Some people experience it when there's a sudden great disaster in their life. Suddenly, all their explanations don't work anymore. The way they had explained, they had all figured it all out, how the universe works and my place in the universe and what the importance of what I'm, my life, my work, what I've achieved and done. And suddenly, the whole thing, your whole career suddenly crumbles. Maybe something crumbles around you and with it, that. And in the last moments of this physical form, you suddenly, all that leaves you. Your story collapses at the same time as the world around you collapses. You might be on a sinking ship or building collapsing. And at that moment, there is a corresponding inner collapse of the edifice, the mental edifice of the story of me. And what is left when that collapses is that was always there. You touch the stillness and you touch the deepest sense of being of I am. That has nothing to do with your physical form or your psychological form of me. Nothing to do with form. And there's a moment of peace and stillness. And many people who have touched death and survived miraculously, many tell the story of suddenly encountering a realm of great serenity and peace. All fear leaves them. Ah. And then they come back and many of them have never fear death again because they've already faced death. And so death is when the structures crumble, not only around you, but the inner structures. One way is through disaster, and another way is through, the more gentle way is through sitting here. And you've chosen that one. Other people choose the disaster, and that works very well too. And even if there was only a moment before death comes and that is realized, that is the flowering. Your life has flowered. Consciousness has flowered through this form and realized itself through this form. For the first time, well, not the very first, but on this planet, it's still a very rare phenomenon for this to happen. Consciousness, one could say, no, this is only a little, almost a parable, that consciousness itself is dreaming the dream of form and enjoying the dream. The entire universe is Look at the planet of the billions of life forms. Any form that, whatever you could imagine, exists or has existed at some point as a life form. Look at the oceans, how many incredible life forms live in the oceans alone. Every form that, and the wildest imagination could come up with, it'll be somewhere in the ocean. The most, wow, this is, comes out of somebody's dream. Maybe they're on acid. So am I saying that the universe is on acid? Well, something like that. Because there is obviously some wild creation going on. Some incredible dream of most gigantic proportions. And that's only on in one ocean, on one planet. And then on land, millions of insects, different forms of different plants, and then on the level that you cannot see, the microorganisms. And, oh, it's just unbelievable. And that's only one tiny planet of trillions, the vastness of the universe. And everywhere there's the game of form. What a gigantic dream. But built into that dream, because what is in each human is a microcosmic version of the entire universe. So the awakening of humans is also the awakening of the universe, because you cannot separate the human from the entire universe. They need each other. They are totally one. There would not even be a universe without the perceiving consciousness. The one consciousness that comes through humans creates the universe as perceived by humans. Other forms perceive a different universe. It's all the same, and yet it's different. The one consciousness dreaming innumerable dreams. Impossible to understand. But what we see when we look at humans, they are immersed in a kind of dream also. When you're totally identified with your reactions, and you play out the drama of your life in relationships, at work, and you go, and you get elated. Oh, it's great, I made it. Oh, it's, and a few months later, you go down, you lost it again. Oh, it's a stage. All the world's a stage. Shakespeare saw that, and all men and women are merely players. And this is the stuff that dreams are made on. So humans can wake up out of that dreamlike existence that they are otherwise immersed in, where there is no sense of who they are apart from the script that they act out, the inner script. Complete identification. And then there's the possibility of awakening, becoming aware of that which underlies the script, without which there would be no script, there would be nothing. There's a vast realm of still, aware presence from where you can see the dream world without being immersed in it. The body is still in it, but there is a seeing. You can see your own drama. You can see yourself playing out your own script. And gradually, there's a the awakening is, something arises that is not part of the play of form, but that can see the play of form. And if that can arise in you, it means it is a universal movement. So through you, the universe not only wants to experience this gigantic dream, there's something else built into the dream, and that is the need of the universe to awaken out of the dream. It loves that even more than the dream. And that is, so what we cannot even begin to conceive of the magnitude of what looks only like some people in a room sitting, listening, speaking, that this is part of a much larger movement that's connected to even the most distant galaxy, is part of something that is happening in the universe. It is an event created by the one life that is the universe. So you think on a personal level, it's good to sit here because your life becomes lighter, free. So you feel a relief on a personal level, suffering, less and less suffering, clarity arising, stillness arising, a sense of connectedness, of beingness, a deeper sense of I. But that is all a huge event of cosmic proportions. So the awakening is the awakening of the totality through this form. That is the purpose of your life, to be that. So you align yourself with the larger purpose. The secondary purpose is whatever you do in your life, and you can bring the opening into anything that you do, almost anything. If you can't, you leave it. Some things have to be left, and other things are fine. It happens wherever you are. So this is what we temporarily call stillness in you, becoming aware that that dimension is already there. Coming to the end of identification with thinking and realizing that you are more fully yourself when you do not think, without trying not to think. There are many here who already experience the state of being free of thinking without even knowing it. You may be walking and looking at a tree and seeing the magnificence of that spectacle of the dying leaves in all their beauty. And you're perceiving that in and through stillness. And perhaps a minute later you might say something to a person next to you and say, "Isn't that wonderful?" And you may not realize that for a minute or 10 seconds or 5 seconds you have looked at that, and there was a deep sense of response, of oneness, or even with it, but no interpretation. And then you notice something strange. Whenever you look at something for the first time, if you're very alert, you will notice that. When you glance at something for the first time, whatever it is, your head shifts, your vision, your field of vision shifts, it goes shh, and it is here. There's a lot of nature around here. It may be a tree, a flower, the sky, or it may be something man-made, whatever it is, but nature particularly.
Lesson 2, continued on Disc 3.